You're listening to a podcast from 702.
So we were going to talk about fussy eating, you know, children who are fussy eaters. And then my producer, Ntateng, just started her stories about her son and how much of a fussy eater he's been over the years. He's 19 now. He doesn't eat red meat, but he eats burgers or minced meat. He doesn't do milk, but he does cheese. And then his choice of vegetables is absolutely random. And he is stubborn. And over the years, he's proven that he would rather not eat, almost like starve, than eat something that he doesn't like. And today he's 19 and still fussy. Well, fussy eaters, when kids are fussy eaters, it can make meal times quite stressful for everyone involved. So should you be concerned? How does this actually come about? And are there strategies that we can use? So if you have a fussy eater in your home, just share your experiences with us as we chat to Mpho Tsukudu, who's a dietitian and also the author of Eat Ding. Mpho, good to connect with you again in a brand new year this time. Are you well?
I'm good. Thank you for asking. Are you good?
Yes, I'm well. Thank you. Lovely to chat to you. And we're talking about fussy eaters. This is one of those perennial issues when it comes to raising children. And this research also suggests they followed 300 children and they found certain patterns. The researchers found that choosy four-year-olds were still turning their noses up at many foods, even at 9 years old. And this suggests that finicky eaters, that this is a trait that they keep. It's more than a phase when they are younger. Is this what you have also found over the years as a dietitian?
It is true. And the research, Azania, shows that children, yes, our taste preference is determined by genetics, but it's also determined by how the food was introduced. Especially if we do a lot of research, looks at that when you are, what you are eating as a mother when you are pregnant and also when you are breastfeeding will greatly affect the taste preference for the child. So mm-hmm. encouraging mothers to eat a wide variety of food, especially vegetables, children tend to like the food much better than when the mother was eating a diet that is bland and it wasn't healthy.
Oh my goodness. So you know, we need to really get a sense of that gestation period and how it informs so much of life beyond, you know, a child being born. And I say that because just recently, the idea of anxiety, that if there's a lot of emotional distress that the mother endures while she's pregnant, that might also inform the emotional and psychological state of the child later in life or once they're born. So this also proves that, once again, that when a woman is pregnant, there is a lot of information that is being transferred into that being that will be with them long into life.
Yes, I've seen that research. It does make sense, yes. Mm. And a lot more is coming out.
Yes, yes. So the fussiness is due to the limited kind of the range of food, the limited range of food or the food that the mother was preferring during breastfeeding and pregnancy. So is it something that can be changed or undone later, or maybe the father's side of things might help to bring about a broader, a better balance?
I haven't seen much of the literature when it comes to the father side, but what we know is that there's a genetic component, mm-hmm. especially when we are looking at the bitter taste. So because the interest with the bitter taste that we find in cruciferous vegetables, so your broccoli, cauliflower, a lot of morocco and kale, is that the bitter part of it, the same as the olive oils and a lot more colorful foods, that is the taste that indicates that there's a lot of antioxidants and polyphenols and all the colorful things that interact with your bacteria in the gut to enable you to digest the food better, especially looking at the digestion of fat and the digestion of glucose, but also then knowing that what happens in the gut then affects your brain. Mm. And also what happens in your brain affects your gut. So things like your mood and your concentration are affected with what you're eating. So what the research actually is looking at is how do you actually encourage people to eat the better foods.
Yes.
And the small percentage of people is, yes, genetics, but it also looks at the what you are exposed to. But it also looks at the introduction of solids. So especially in South Africa, if you look at the baby foods that we have in the stores, mm-hmm. you always see things that are sweet only and things that have a little bit of fat. There isn't the umami flavor, there isn't the beta flavor, there isn't the sour flavor. So the longer you take to introduce those taste to the child, then it's going to be more difficult for the child to start eating them when they are older.
Right. So we should put an emphasis on introducing what you've described as bitter foods, which is the broccolis and the cruciferous. Is that what they're called? That particular category.
Cruciferous vegetables.
Yes, yes. So we should focus on introducing those with the longer and withhold and just keeping the sweet stuff, just holding it off for as long as possible.
Yes, that's the holding it off, but in terms of how our taste science, so that's an area of research that I'm actually looking at,
yeah.
is that the taste, when children are born, they tend to prefer things that are sweet, like your breast milk, and they also like a little bit of salty and a little bit of umami. Mm-hmm. They don't like the bitter foods. So there are studies that are being done that they would look at the child's facial reactions from a few hours being born of how they react. It's actually very funny how they react to different flavors. But with also the taste with cooking, you can learn to balance these flavors.
Okay.
Like when you're cooking broccoli, if you put a little bit of lemon juice, it sort of balances the flavor. If you put a little bit of sweetness, not to make it overly sweet, but cooking and how you present the foods. Especially knowing that when I give you the food, that what we call as taste is not actually what happens in your taste. But what you see, the texture of the food, the smell of the food, and the taste influence how I'm going to influence my decision to swallow or not to swallow. So there's a lot of things that play into me wanting to swallow or not to swallow. So we need to put a lot of effort in making food look good. Like your producer, I was listening before I came in, your producer was saying, my child doesn't want to eat meat, but he eats minced meat. It depends on the texture. So you find that the child doesn't want to eat mashed potatoes because they're sensitive to a smooth taste. But then they would eat chips and wedges and baby potatoes and in any other form, that they don't want the milk because milk is liquid, then it gets into your mouth and it runs all over. It's an overwhelming sensation. Mm-hmm. But if you give them cheese, then they will like it. You see, so you need to present the food in different forms and taste and texture.
Yes, all right. So as part of the introduction to solids, it needs to also achieve that, the different textures, the different items, and not just stick with one particular one. You know, I was reading a book by James Nestor. I've been reading that book called Breath, right? And he talks about even the formation of the mouth, the nasal cavity, that how we eat, the fact that we're now eating much softer food, food that has been cooked, even informs the shape of our nasal cavity, the shape of the mouth cavity, which then later informs how we breathe and things like sinuses and so on. So the texture idea seems to extend to even beyond a child being a fussy eater, but that there are other developmental things that are happening in the child's head, skull, face, if we can put it that way.
Yes, it does. And especially with children now, that any child needs orthodontics. It wasn't then because they don't chew bones. And there's a lot more research also going into that with the preference. And how do we actually change the taste side? And there are associations, a few actually in Europe, that are looking at taste education in children,
yes.
that from a very young age, to look at it, touch it, smell it, what does it taste like, that the children start developing languages and to identify the food. A lot of the schools even in South Africa, some have gardens that children who tend to participate in growing the food, even if your child is starting from a young age and say, please chop this, please cut this, let's go work in the garden. If children participate in the production of food, they are more likely to eat the food because they have invested time into that and energy. They've seen it grow. It's not come and eat, then you put carrot and morocco on your plate and your child's thinking, where does this come from?
Yeah, so it doesn't come from a squeezed bottle, a squeezed little container that you just suck out of. You know, I've seen that and I hate that container. No offense to any parents who choose it for their children. It looks like a juice bottle, but a soft juice bottle, like a foil, a thick foil. And then it has this little nozzle at the top that your child can just suck this mushy food out of. And it looks incredibly convenient, but I just think, that can't be proper. That can't be helpful to a child's development. It's me just exercising a little bit of judgment and talking from a personal perspective here. Let's take a listen to your voice notes, and we're going to continue our conversation with Mpotso Kudu. I'm going to read your messages out as well. Here's the first one.
Hi, Azza. You know, I always find it so funny when people talk about their children being fussy eaters, because with my children, I made a conscious decision when I was pregnant that I was going to eat things that are healthy, and even if I didn't particularly like them. But what ended up happening is that my children like those foods now, because I don't know if maybe it has to do with the fact that they ate them for so long while they were inside. But even today, my children will happily pass over a cake and then rather eat a salad. Even my three-year-old, she loves salads. She loves her veggies. Not so fond of chocolates and sweets. So, I learned with both of my kids. And even today, they're still healthy.
Paul, I think this speaks directly to what you were saying.
Yes, even after giving birth, you need to continue the food. Don't stop that because I've finished with breastfeeding. You need to continue that healthy diet or different
yes.
varieties of food.
Yeah, Gabelo says, my 13-year-old son has always been a fussy eater since when he could eat solids. Never ate red meat, called it meat for lions. Would spit out sweets as a baby. Oh, why is he having sweets as a baby? But anyway, his meals cooked separately now are about lots of pasta and vegetables. And so that's one person's experience. Another one talks about an 18-month-old and he doesn't like eating soft foods like pap, banana. He'll eat a mango if it's not too ripe. How can I introduce soft foods, as he hates being fed those soft foods now? So at 18 months, doesn't have a preference for that particular texture. Do you follow the child's guide, the child's lead, or do you persist with introducing other textures?
I don't think there's nothing wrong with that, because there are we also talk about the sensitivity. That imagine if there's nothing in my mouth and you put a strawberry in my mouth, the strawberry then has this rough texture, then it suddenly breaks open and then it's liquid and it has seeds. For some people, it's an overwhelming sensation that they don't like it. So we all have preference in texture. So as long as the diet is varied, that is fine. You know, so like the research, the paper that we are looking at, they are saying that they didn't see any signs of malnutrition in the children. Mm-hmm. That is actually a wrong way of looking at health. Your weight is not a good indicator of your health status. So just because the nurse is saying your child is growing, the graph is growing well, but knowing that your child doesn't have a variety of nutrients, that is actually the foundation of lifestyle diseases. So the big researchers that are doing in intake health in children is trying to prevent the diabetes in later stage, because we understand that they start from a young age. So as long as the child is eating a variety of food, texture is preference.
Texture is preference.
Yes. So it doesn't matter whether the beans as they come, mm-hmm. or you mash them into mashed potatoes, as long as the child has eaten beans. It doesn't destroy the nutritional component of the beans or of spinach. So we need to also understand that some parents will say, my child doesn't like meat, but they may like meat in minced meat or in boerewors, not as the whole piece of chicken.
Right. So not ultimatums, not coercion, not letting them starve. We can conceal the or even change the look of the things we want them to eat, rather.
Yes, don't, because then especially in girls, but we also seeing in boys, then the coercion and the screening actually is part of the foundation of eating disorders.
Right.
If your children don't want to eat vegetables, you can hide spinach in like a native spinach and cheese muffins. If they don't want to eat beans, I'd usually say when I make mashed potatoes, then mix it with butter beans. When I make carrot, then take the orange lentils and mash them together. If you're making gravy, grate the carrot inside. You can chop vegetables very finely into their pasta, because children like pasta or sauces, then find a way to hide it.
Mm-hmm. What you said was interesting that this also shapes their long-term relationship with food and can be a precursor to eating disorders. So we have to be quite careful about how we manage this difference in what we want, how we want our children to behave around food or what we want them to eat. Because sometimes we just use authority, simple authority, raising of voice, a threat of punishment and so on, to force them to finish that a couple of the peas that are on their plate, the carrots that are on their plate when they don't want to.
Yes, and research shows that, especially looking at the beta taste, because this is where a lot of focus is looking at, because those are the much more healthier foods, is that we introduce them slower, and even if it's not your preference, you build up the tolerance. You tend to like it more as time goes on. So you can start with a teaspoon of cabbage, and you know, next week we go to a teaspoon and a half, and you build it up. The more you eat it, the more you're more likely to like it. So as parents, if your child only likes butternut and potatoes and doesn't like the green stuff, introduce them in smaller bits. As time goes on, if they see that they're not scary, they tend to get used to the taste. So don't just put half a cup of spinach on the plate.
Yes. We are taking calls on 011-883-0702, 31702 for your SMSs. We've got Penny calling from Randburg. Hi, Penny.
Hi, Aza, and hi, Mpo. It's a very fascinating conversation that you're having. You know, especially for us who are mothers like 15 years or so ago.
Yeah.
For example, my son doesn't like tomatoes and gravy, but he likes tomato sauce. I always laugh at him because I'm like,
be consistent, dude.
Yeah. And then I used to fight with a lot of people when I was pregnant about eating fish. I don't know, you know, I remember when I was pregnant, they would say, you know, you're not supposed to eat fish when you're pregnant. And I used to say, I need omega-3 in my body. And then, you know, fish is a thing. And
Penny? Oh, that line. Penny? Yeah, we've got you now. Carry on.
Yes. And then it's this conversation just confirms, you know, the information that we didn't have that keeps coming out of science in later years. And also how, you know, our taste buds are formulated that early. You know, I grew up in a rural area. I can eat anything and everything. And trying to get my kids to eat things like that or having access to, like, that type of food is also very hard. So I think this will help a lot of mothers to, you know, to understand some of the challenges that they might be facing with their children. And maybe also share from, like, our own experiences on the food that we were exposed to when we were growing up. For example, I don't eat gotas. I don't give my kids gotas. I grew up eating that because I find them problematic, and that's just that.
You're so right. Yeah. Penny, thank you so much. It's like with Ntateng as well, we were saying, you know, if you knew the things that you knew now, that you know now, back then, of course you would have done things completely differently. A WhatsApp says, I find the explanation, the nutritional value, what's good for in the body with kids, that they tend to, it's good that they then get into a pattern of associating the food with the benefit. Do you find that to be an effective way, Mpo, of getting that persuasion, like reasoning with them and telling them that if you eat your broccoli, this is the goodness or this is the benefit that you will derive from it. Not dealing with it from an authoritative perspective, but telling them with reason and with explanation.
That actually works. Children love learning. So it's actually a very good strategy. And also to Penny, that we need to also, this is not making people feel guilty. The research in taste science has only been developing in the last 20 years. It's actually new. So there's a lot that we didn't know.
Mm.
But as things come up, you know, we're finding out that children's habits are influenced by many other factors.
Yes.
So you shouldn't actually feel guilty.
Good. Gilebogile says, my 10-month-old baby has days where she won't eat, and this continues for days like 3 to 4 days. But then when she eats, she eats. Is this okay, or should I force her to eat when she doesn't, on the days where she doesn't?
I don't think it's okay. You should actually maybe consult a pediatrician,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of speech therapists also work, especially with the textures and helping children, because it's also part of the speech development that they need medical attention.
Mm-hmm. One says, I blend all my vegetables for my sons, onions, garlic, lots of vegetables, which I add to stews and curries, and they lick their plates. No picking out onions and carrots. That comes from Gail. So she has certainly found a strategy. And so thank you so much, Mpo. I think this has been incredibly helpful in helping us understand where it starts, but along the way, how we can better support children in developing a broader preference, you know, a wide preference and a choice spectrum as far as their diets are concerned.
Thank you very much, Azania.
Thank you. That is Mpo Tsukudu, a dietitian and author of Eat Ding, because if we don't do it effectively from the onset, they will go on to be fussy eaters. Yes, fussy children, kids who are quite fussy and finicky when they're young, grow to become finicky and fussy when they're older.